Can't tell you how many times I've seen people that have walked with God and been victorious in their walk for a season, but then they begin to dabble back in the things of the world. And all of a sudden you begin to see their Christian walk diminish. Their joy diminishes. The peace that they had diminished. The confidence and the boldness that they once had. Their faith, it begins to diminish. It's a divine principle. And so if you lessen the temple, He will lessen you.
When it comes to life, what are you living for? What drives you? What gives you that sense of purpose and passion? In the Christian life, there are types of materials that we are to use as we stand on the firm foundation of Jesus Christ. And the motivation of those materials are either going to be used spiritually or carnally. And how we build will determine the status of our rewards. Today on Seeds of Commitment, Lance Cook will talk about how to build our lives well with the materials that God gives us. As we continue our studies in 1 Corinthians, look at chapter 3. We'll be examining verses 12 through 23. So with today's broadcast of Seeds of Commitment, here's Lance.
Thirdly, it was the finished work of the cross. Paul said in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 15, that Jesus died for all, that those who live should live no longer for themselves, but for Him who died for them and rose again. Paul says, I got to a point in my life where the sacrifice that Jesus made for me on the cross, man, that was powerful. It was a strong motivating factor for me to do my best for this one that laid down His life for me. So he wanted to please the Lord. He felt the love of the Lord, and he was aware of the finished work of the Lord. And that all gave him strong motivation for doing his best for the Lord. Again, as we follow the life of Paul the Apostle, he wasn't into doing things halfway. He ran the Christian race. He fought the Christian fight with a wholehearted zeal, with resolve to win. And that as well, as he would say in 1 Corinthians 9, to win that imperishable crown or that the wreath of the Lord's rewards. You know, Jesus himself said, Revelation 22, behold, I am coming quickly, and my reward is with me to render to every man according to what he has done. Now in verse 13, it makes it more than clear. Each of our works will become evident for what they truly were in that day. Fire again is a symbol of testing. Fire. You take a metal and you reduce it down. You put it in the flame and it's in that smelting pot. And it melts down and it reduces down. And all of the dross, all of that which is not valuable, all of that which needs to be eliminated, rises to the top and it's skimmed off. The smelter will skim it off of that smelting pot. And it's gone. And that is exactly what's going to happen to you, to me, one day as believers, where we will stand before the Lord on that day. And all of what we did, all of our works, will be tested as through the fire. And that which we did with the right motives and with the right heart will indeed move on eternally and produce an eternal reward. Verse 14, if anyone's work which he has built on endures, he will receive a reward. The subject here at this particular time with the believers before Jesus Christ is not God's judgment on sin. This judgment seat before which all believers are going to stand one day, which Paul talks about here, talks about in Romans 14 and in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, is the Greek word bema seat. It's the bema seat. Bema means tribunal. It's not so much a judgment seat where you picture the courtroom and there's the judge and he's about to mete out judgment, you see. The better way to picture this is to picture maybe the Olympics and the race is over now. And they've got the platforms, the two lower and the one in the middle, and they're about to hand out in those days the wreath, the reward for how well you did. And again, it's not how many races you ran. It's not what race you ran. It's not, you know, any of that. It's the motive. It's the reason. It's the purpose. It's the heart and the motive. And one day we will all, as believers, stand before Jesus Christ And he will reward us based on the motives behind our work. That is an incredible concept. The gold and the silver and the precious stones, they will not burn. They will stand the test and they will produce this great reward. Now, the Lord's rewards, of course, are going to be eternal. They're imperishable. New Testament refers to these rewards as crowns. 2 Timothy chapter 4, for you note takers, there will be a crown of righteousness for all who will be saved. So if you make it in, you're getting one, okay? Then there will be, of course, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, the crown of exaltation, the crown for those that proclaim the truth to others. Then in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 4, there is the unfading crown of glory, and that is the crown that is given for those who did faithful service unto the Lord. Then in James chapter 1, verse 12, it tells us there will be the crown of life for all who loved the Lord. Now, we look at this and we kind of try and picture this, and it's like, okay, I'm going to get there, I'm going to stand before the Lord one day, and all this that I've done is going to be tested. Yes. And you're telling me that I might walk into the kingdom and one day have all of these crowns? Yes. Fact is, the book of Revelation talks about these crowns. More specifically, it talks about the elders and they're, of course, being there in the future tense there and them having the crowns. What did they do with their crowns? Man, they came to the throne and they saw Jesus and they took their crowns. All of those imperishable, beautiful rewards on what they did by being saved or what they did for the Lord with the right motives, and they cast them at His feet. Some of you are saying, I ain't casting no crown nowhere. I worked hard for that crown. I'm going to keep it. Let me tell you what. We're not talking about trophies on your wall so all your friends can come into your house and see all the great baseball things you did. When you get to heaven or I get to heaven, it's going to be clear to everybody, Jesus. It's all about Jesus. I'm here because of Jesus. Man, my proclaiming truth was all about Jesus. My loving Him, He loved me first. It's all about Him. I'm unworthy to carry this crown. I'm unworthy to receive this crown. It's yours. It's all because of you. Well, some, of course, will stand before the Lord and they'll have the work that they did for the Lord tested. And much of it will be burnt right there. It will not produce a reward because their heart and their motives, of course, were not right. But if the work is burned up in verse 15, he's going to suffer loss, no reward, but he himself will be saved. In other words, he will enter into eternity. There won't be the rewards for those particular works. We move on now. So we move on into verses 16 and 17. I want you to keep in mind that the theme of unity is really on Paul's heart. And so that motivation again to build on the right foundation, the right way. The motivation, one day you're going to have rewards. But what's the result down here? If we all come to the same foundation, we're coming together. If we all build the right way with the right motives, we're coming together. The topic is unity. And now he's going to talk about the temple of God. And as we go through these next few verses, as we go through these next few thoughts, he is again talking about the importance of coming together and coming together as one. Do you not know that you are, believers, the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? If anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him. For the temple of God is holy, which temple you are. Now, when Paul starts to use this word temple, he says, you are to the church. You are the temple of God. He uses the word you, in the plural tense. All of us corporately and collectively are the temple of God. Now, we know that Scripture talks about us as well being as individual believers, also a temple of God. But here we see that corporately together, we also make up this temple of God. He referred to us previously as a building there in verse 9. But corporately together, we make up this temple of God. Ephesians chapter 2, Paul put it this way. He says, therefore, you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but now fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God. Verse 20, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself, of course, being the chief cornerstone, in whom the whole building, that's you and I, being joined together, grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. This cross your mind at all when you pulled onto the parking lot today? Did you like have that conversation with your wife? Hey, guess what? We're coming here this morning, and our coming here is one piece, one stone, two stones in the makeup of the temple of God. I like this because he says the temple is alive. It's growing. We're growing into a temple in the Lord. Peter put it this way in 1 Peter chapter 2, where he says, you know, Lord is gracious, and we come to him as to a living stone. He was indeed rejected by men, but chosen by God, and he's precious. And then he says there in verse 5, you also, talking to believers, you also as living stones are being built up a spiritual house with Jesus as the cornerstone. God's building, the church, his temple, is alive. Verse 16 tells us the Spirit of God dwells in you. Again, he is referring here to the congregation, alive. This week has been a challenging week to pastor this church in that we've dealt with so much death. Three families have buried their loved ones this week. And to be around that, it's to be around a lot of discouragement, a lot of pain, a lot of sorrow. God's in it. They're all believers. All that part's good. But death does create a certain atmosphere of its own. Heavy. Things seem to have stopped. And man, Wednesday night rolled around. And I came here and I could not wait to get to church. I've been around death. I've been visiting people all week that are near death on the hospital bed. We've got several that are right there as well. And I couldn't wait to just get into the house of God. And I was so excited about the Bible study. As I sit in my office the last few minutes, I'll hear people, you know, getting in here. I looked, okay, it's a few minutes for the study. And the Lord sometimes says, get down and teach it right now. And it was one of those nights. And it was one of those nights where the topic itself was very directive as far as pulling the body together. It was clear. Nehemiah, they were to come back to the city of Jerusalem. They were to move there. They were to take ownership in the city because they were to glorify God in that city. They were to come back and live there. We talked about what happens when they come, the praise and all of that and whatnot. And it was just as if the Lord was just setting us up for this incredible service where he would be very much seen and felt. There would be life in this particular service. When I was teaching, I was amazed at what the Holy Spirit was bringing out. And I was just amazed at what God was saying to this church and how timely it was and how refreshing it was. And when I was done, I says, now we have this time to worship. And I typically will go down and sit in this back little room and just worship the Lord with the body. Or I'll walk around and go to the back. And as I was, you know, in the green room there, I was sitting back there and I was just, you know, listening to the songs. I was going, oh man, the Spirit of God is so intense right now in this room. Wow. I mean, I had a hard time getting up. It was just the presence of God and the praise of the people. I hadn't heard this place sing like this before. It was amazing. And I walked down the corridor, the hallway here, and sometimes they play the service through the corridor speakers, and it's loud. It's too loud. You can't hear yourself talk. And I was calling out to one of the ushers, and he couldn't hear me. And the thought came to me, man, they got the speakers on too loud again. As I got underneath one of the speakers, I realized that's not the speakers. That's the people in this room. And that was the first time I had ever heard the praise of this sanctuary echo through the corridors of this church. And I walked in the back and there were people, some people standing and lifting their hands. Some people were whistling. It was like just an expression where we had truly become alive to the Spirit of God. The living stones had allowed the life of God to just kick within them. There was an honest expression of surrender and vulnerability. And who cares what someone thinks right now? And who cares about what time it is right now? And who cares about, you know, my snack afterwards? It was like, whoo, Jesus. And his house had become what he had designed it to be, living stones alive. It was amazing. It's amazing how God's plan is to create these living stones for the very purpose of coming together. It's amazing. I go down to the beach with the junior high and high schoolers each year, and I always like to hang out at least a couple of times with them at the fire pit. Load up all this wood, boom, light the fire, Man, I'll tell you, that afternoon wind begins to blow, sun starts going down, everyone's fighting for the front seat. Get it close to the fire. It's warm, it's comfortable. I gotta be close. And you know, every now and then, one of those embers, pops out, and you say, like a missile. It land on someone's blanket. Oh, get that thing off of there. I remember one time, watching this big old ember land on a blanket, and they did the hot potato thing, and it landed, and it was just sitting there on fire, glowing, 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 glowing. It was about 10 feet away from the fire, though, and it started to go out. And I said to the kids, you know, Jesus wants us to be red hot. And that's what happens. Look at that. Look at that ember. It's just getting darker and darker and colder and colder. That's what happens when we get away from what He's designed us to be. God has designed us to come together and to be this fire, His life, together. And some of you might find yourself a bit cooled down because you're away. I like this phrase, this, do you not know that you are the temple of God? In that day, when they would speak the Greek language or write down the Greek, they would describe the physical structure. What Herod had remodeled, those giant stones and the beautiful structure there on the Temple Mount, they would describe that with the Greek word perion, and it was about limited to that. But then they had a special word reserved for the Holy of Holies. The Holy of Holies was a 15 by 15 cube where the Ark of the Covenant sat, where God's presence was to be found. And you didn't refer to that as the temple ever. There was a completely separate word for that room that inhabited the presence of God. It's naos. And when Paul says to the church, you are the temple, he doesn't say you are the perion. You're just this physical structure out there. He says, you are naos. You are what inhabits the presence of God. If we really understood this today, as we did drive here today, and we knew that we were coming close, up Imperial, left on Euclid, or whatever your route might be, the closer we got to the driveway, I'm sure our radio stations would change a bit. I'm sure the conversations in the car would change a bit. Attitudes in the car would change a bit. If we really understood what this place has been designed to be and what it is. I think about Moses there in Exodus chapter 3, an incredible story. He's out minding his father-in-law's sheep. All of a sudden there on Mount Horeb, he's looking around. He sees this bush. It's on fire. Okay, we have fires out in the desert. But that's the only bush, and it won't consume. It's still on fire, still on fire, still on fire. So he says, I'm going to go over there and check this out. And so he walks over. Little does he know that that is God. That is naos. That is the very presence of God has just descended upon this bush and is consuming the bush. And God is about to speak to him through that bush. And as Moses kind of flippantly, casually, curiosity's driving him, it's not a time of worship. It's not a time of having the right heart. It's not a time of approaching God because I know that's God. It's just curious about the bush. It's not a bush, man. It's God. He was approaching naos the wrong way, and the Lord stopped him. He stopped him. Moses, stop. Take the sandals off your feet before you come 1 foot closer. Because where you are standing is holy ground. It's a hallowed thing in the Hebrew. Go to Japan. I like taking people for the first time. I always like watching them walk into houses. We don't tell them they got to take off their shoes. That's a cultural thing. I like to watch the Japanese get all worked up over it, you see. So we take off our shoes behind them, and they're all walking and greeting everybody. They got their shoes on, and it's like, you just messed up my whole house, man. We've lived here for 30 years. No one's ever put shoes on our floor, and you Americans come in here and walk on my floor. But they take that serious. Because what they're saying is, don't drag the dirt in to my nice bamboo floor on my tatami mats and whatnot. And God looks at his house as well, and he says, oh yes, come in as you are, but understand where you are. And understand, as I said with Moses, I say to you, take some sandals off. Sandals represent anything that we can remove, anything that we can reject, anything that we can confess. Get rid of it. You're in a holy place. And we are going to come together, and the level of this flame, the level of this heat, the level of this purity is directly proportionate to us and the level of our openness to the flame, to God, to the Holy One. And I believe Wednesday night is just an example, is that we understood that corporately. We began to understand what it is and who God is in a very unique way. And the response was just incredible. He says in verse 17 as well, if anyone defiles the temple of God, which is a great challenge to consider, if anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him, for the temple of God is holy, which temple you are. Remember, he's talking about the church. Defile here means to bring into a worse state, to injure or to diminish. When we ignore the temple, when we bring sin into the camp, false teaching is allowed into the camp. When the camp is divided, when the camp is attacked, all of that, you might say, is the defiling of the temple. And he goes on to say, if we defile it, then God will destroy us. Now, destroy here does not mean to annihilate or to damn. It carries the same meaning as defile, to bring into a worse state or to injure or to diminish. And so if you lessen the temple, he will lessen you. Your walk will diminish. It won't be what it was. Your discernment will diminish. Power will diminish. Your ability to be used by God will diminish. Relationships with the people of God will diminish. Can't tell you how many times I've seen people that have walked with God and been victorious in their walk for a season, but then they begin to dabble back in the things of the world. And all of a sudden, you begin to see their Christian walk diminish. Their joy diminishes. The peace that they had diminished. The confidence and the boldness that they once had. Their faith, it begins to diminish. It's a divine principle. We've got to go on and close this now. He says in verse 18, let no one deceive himself. Anyone among you seems to be wise in this age, let him become a fool that he might become wise. Now, Paul again is talking about the things of God. And already several times he has said that the wisdom of God is superior to the wisdom of the world. When it comes to spiritual matters and eternal matters and moral matters, God's wisdom is always going to be superior. Man's wisdom is always going to be inferior. Paul knows that there are divisions in the church because many in the church are holding the wisdom and the philosophy of man as superior to God's. He knows that the natural tendency is to look at the wisdom of God and to say, oh, yeah, but these guys say these things, and to follow those guys in those things. So once again, following a great presentation of the wisdom of God, he begins to again warn them of getting caught up in the wisdom of man. For the wisdom of this world, again, is foolishness with God. For it is written, he catches the wise in their own craftiness. And again, the Lord knows the thoughts of the wise, that they are ultimately futile. So there will be people in the church, even right now in this place, live on the internet, future, or days on the radio ahead, that will hear these wise things in the Word of God. But they'll say, nah, I've got a different take on that. And whenever man, you know, begins to elevate his contemporary wisdom over the Lord's, there's going to be a problem. Paul has been saying over and over that contemporary human wisdom is mere foolishness. It's the word in the Greek, moraia, which we derive moronic from. It's moronic without, you know, God. And so he's saying to this church, listen, take heed to what God has said in his word. Take heed to the superior wisdom of God and what he's called you to be. Build as a wise builder with the right materials, the right heart, the right way, on the right foundation. Man, you will become one as a church. He wants us to be one.
Well, today Pastor Lance has been teaching us how to build our lives well with the materials that God gives to us to build. As we've been looking at 1 Corinthians chapter 3, we hope that you have benefited from today's broadcast. In fact, if you would like to receive this study on audio cassette or compact disc in its entirety, please make sure you mention tape number 4602-09. That's 4602-09. And simply call us at 714-441-2845. We accept Visa, MasterCard, and Discover Card. Again, simply call us at 714-441-2845. If you're writing a check to us, please make it payable to Seeds of Commitment. The address is 1370 South Euclid Street, La Habra, California, 90631. That's Seeds of Commitment, 1370 South Euclid Street, La Habra, California, 90631. To get all of our contact information, simply go to our website at www.seedsofcommitment.org. It's there you can know more about the radio ministry, where you can hear Seeds of Commitment, and the other items that we have posted on our website, as well as leaving us your comments and thoughts via email. Simply log on to www.seedsofcommitment.org. Sowing His Word, fulfilling His purpose. This is Seeds of Commitment, the broadcast ministry of Calvary Chapel La Habra in California. Join Lance Cook for more insights in 1 Corinthians on our next broadcast. Until then, may God bless you as you stay committed to the Word of God.